I'm very honored to be on this panel with Alan and Alice, who led the first three trips that I took to Palestine and Israel and introduced me to the situation and to many local organizers. Personally, I've not visited the West Bank in a medical capacity since 2010, although I've made three subsequent visits there the last September. And at that time, I was co-leading groups of students and teachers just on a human rights basis, but we went to meet many of the same activists that they had introduced me to on the medical trips. On my last visit with a single colleague, we were making a visit to Dr. Mazen Kumsia, a biology professor at Bethlehem University and a distinguished author and activist. He invited us to attend a conference in Ramallah on the One Democratic State in Greater Palestine movement. I was not previously aware of this group and was very excited to hear about it because on all my previous trips, activists that I had met were all very focused on the two-state solution. None of them really had any use for Fatah, the political leadership of the West Bank, or Hamas, the leading party in Gaza, but they believed that first they should gain independence and deal with the leadership and structure of society later. The One Democratic State movement has been holding regular conferences since 2007, although the idea has been raised for many years before that. The newly organized movement is endorsed by many prominent Palestinians and a few Israelis. The two speakers at the conference we attended in Ramallah were Ilan Pape, an Israeli historian, and Dr. Kumsia. Pape, who has been forced to teach outside of Israel, had exposed the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians as the Israeli state was founded. He had gained access to the papers of Ben-Gurion, which described the planned killing and displacement of about 750,000 Palestinians beginning in 1947 and the destruction of over 500 villages. His talk made a convincing case that Israel never intended to allow a Palestinian state, but paid lip service to the idea while continuing to seize land in the West Bank and to rain violence down on Gaza. The Israeli intention, he said, and which I agree, was always to gain control over as much land as possible and dispense with as many as possible Palestinians. Dr. Kumsia added that a mass movement uniting Palestinians and anti-occupation Israelis was needed to have any hope of success in achieving a secular multi-ethnic state. He suggested such tactics as mass demonstrations at the wall uniting Palestinians and anti-occupation Israelis. To date, this movement has been mostly an intellectual exercise without direct engagement or sponsorship of struggle, which is actually its main weakness. Of course, today we are witnessing the mass rebellion of youth, which seems to be somewhat leaderless, but is expressing the rage at the conditions which the two previous speakers have described to you. They are certainly certain that they are faced with an endless occupation, certain that Israel has no plan to end it, and frustrated with their own political leaders, who in the case of Fatah cooperate with Israel and do nothing to aid resistance or find a solution. What is also missing in the one-state movement, in my opinion, is any proposal for what kind of state is being built beyond democratic. I, like most of you, live in a single state that is said to be democratic, and yet it is obvious that great inequality, racism, and drastic differences in health, wealth, and well-being exist within our borders. Perhaps by examining a few health statistics and comparing them with statistics between Palestinians and Israelis and blacks and white in the United States, we will see some interesting parallels. So I brought just a few slides because you hear about health inequities throughout this conference. So here's a slide showing differences in life expectancy between Palestinians and Israelis. So, yes. And you will see that there is about a 10-year difference in life expectancy. Here's one showing the difference in life expectancy between blacks and whites in the United States, and here the difference is about 5 years. This is a slide showing the differences in infant mortality between Israel and the Palestinian territories, and it's about a 5-times-fold difference. But if you look at the rates between blacks and whites in New York City, it's a 3-times-fold difference. The double rate of diabetes for blacks and whites in the United States is actually slightly less than the discrepancy between Jews and Arabs in Israel, Palestine. So, clearly, living in one so-called democratic state doesn't solve the problem of racial inequality. Although the disparities are more severe in Israel and Palestine, they are still very marked in the United States and of a similar degree of magnitude. Despite having a so-called democracy with many laws against discrimination, without walls, and in an area without internal armed conflict. As a Marxist who believes that society is divided into the owning and working classes, which even includes well-paid workers like doctors, I propose that the racist disparities in the U.S. exist and will continue because the United States is a capitalist state which is deeply dependent on racist differentials in wages and services to maintain profits. Blaming the other for social and economic problems that result from profit-hungry motivations of capitalism. In other words, American capitalism could not really survive without racism. Israel and occupied Palestine are also both capitalist states. Although all classes in Palestine are suffering from the occupation, that does not change the fact that there are classes. This was first glaringly evident to me when I first set eyes on Ramallah in 2005, a city with bustling businesses, luxury restaurants, and beautiful homes, nestled in a country full of impoverished villages and refugee camps. Recently, Ali Abu Nima has written a book, The Battle for Justice in Palestine, in which he documents that a small elite dominates the Palestinian economy and also has close ties to Israel. 78% of the Palestinian stock exchange is controlled by the Palestinian Development and Investment Company, which is owned by a few rich families. Palestine is second to worst in the world for the ratio of management to unskilled labor incomes. Of course, Israel is also a very inegalitarian society controlled by a small ruling elite. 18 ruling families have incomes equal to 77% of the national budget in 2006 and take in 32% of the profits from the 500 largest companies. The income gaps between the 90th and 50th percentiles and between the 50th and 10th are the highest in the world. These differentials are highly race-based. Immigrant workers, mostly from Africa and South Asia, are the worst paid, along with Palestinians. Dark-skinned Israelis of Arab or African heritage are also low on the scale in wages and services. This slide, which shows the GINI, or General Inequality Index, is a measure of inequality and shows how close to the high inequality scale are Israel and the United States, right next to each other on your right. It's not possible to find any graphs that include Palestine, but the number on the bottom, which gives the index for Palestine, shows that it would fall right next to Israel and the United States in terms of very high income inequality. Thus, it's evident to me that not only do we need a single non-racist state in all of Greater Palestine, but that such a state would need a new economic structure to be able to provide good health, education, and housing to all its people and to overcome racism. The elites of Palestine and Israel, despite the occupation, already cooperate with each other and preside over highly unequal societies. The Palestinian Authority spends over one quarter of its budget on security, the same amount as on health and education combined, mostly to suppress revolt against Israel. In fact, the Palestinian Authority is such a reliable partner for Israel that they were warned before the Gaza invasion so that they could suppress dissent. This worked very well in 2008, but it didn't work so well in 2014, and it's certainly not working so well today. The rich capitalists of Israel and Palestine would be glad to cooperate even more closely in a single state and to continue racism and exploitation. Some Israeli businessmen already espouse such a solution. Clearly, the creation of a single egalitarian state is not attainable now or anytime soon, but the goal provides a framework for current organizing. Just as we strive in this country for multiracial unity, which we need to win significant reforms or to build long-term struggles, so must Arab and Jewish workers unite in Israel and Palestine. They did so in the 1920s when bosses on both sides built nationalism to divide them. Everywhere, I think it's important that we rely on rank-and-file leadership and participation rather than politicians, sellout religious leaders, union leaders, or foundation. As we engage in immediate struggles, we can reiterate that a profit-based system which relies on racist super-exploitation can ultimately not provide good or equal health care or any other benefit to working people. Personally, I've been working in Jewish Voice for Peace to support the international boycott of Israel, which campaign is important in educating people internationally. I'm also trying to organize groups of JVP speakers who have been to Palestine to speak at schools and colleges, especially community colleges, where students know little about the area. In addition, I hope to continue as a participant in the One State movement and bring my perspective as a communist organizer into that debate. And since I retired, I've also been trying to write some articles. I put a couple of them on the back table.
Thank you.